Welcome to the Savvy Shrink Podcast, brought to you by MHNRnetwork.com. I'm your host, Andrea Schneider. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, therapist, and life coach. I will be sharing helpful information for individuals dealing with varying mental health challenges, ranging from trauma and loss to recovering from toxic relationships in love, work, and family, specifically as relates to narcissistic abuse recovery. Other poignant topics will include maternal mental health and special needs parenting, among others. The podcast welcomes guests who share their expertise in trauma-informed and evidence-based interventions, including the latest in neuropsychology. My ebook, Soul Vampires: Reclaiming Your Lifeblood After Narcissistic Abuse, is available at BookBaby and other digital online booksellers. I'm a believer in a strengths-focused perspective for my clients, which harnesses the power of internal wisdom in crafting the inner alchemy of healing. Please grab a cup of coffee or tea, and welcome to the Savvy Shrink.
Hello, and welcome to the Savvy Shrink. My guest today is Kristen Walker, CEO of Everything EHR, CEO of Mental Health News Radio, and host of Mental Health News Radio. Welcome, Kristen.
Thanks, Andrea Schneider. So glad that I'm on your inaugural episode here.
I'm so honored that you're on my inaugural episode, and thank you for being here. I'm just so honored to have you here today. And would you please share with our listeners what you're up to in your business and give us a little information about what you do in the work world?
Absolutely. Well, I have a technology consulting firm, and we help behavioral health organizations find the right electronic health record software. It's very boring, but I seem to be good at it.
You're great at it.
That's one of my hats. And the other one is that I have a podcast called Mental Health News Radio that's been going on for about 4 years. It's done much better than I ever thought it would. And this year we launched Mental Health News Radio Network, where we produce other people's podcasts for them. And we have several on our network, including yours, The Savvy Shrink, which is awesome.
Yay. I'm so excited. I'm very honored to be a part of your network and so happy to have you here today. And, you know, real curious to learn more about your experience as a female entrepreneur and the work that you currently do. So it's great to have kind of an understanding of what you do, and love to hear more about what experiences drove you to your current businesses. So that's pretty cutting edge, modern technology, pretty awesome stuff. Could you share a little bit more about your experiences and how you got to where you're at?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's been a long, windy road. You know, serial entrepreneurs will understand what I'm talking about, but I've had multiple different companies, and the road to having a podcast and a podcast network was really born out of me wanting to use my voice and wanting to. Really, the original thought about it was to have a thank you, like a love letter to all of the people that choose behavioral health as their profession. Nobody goes into this profession to be a gazillionaire. You do it to help people. And I thought, I've struggled with depression since I was very, very young. And I was helped so much by counselors, life coaches, the behavioral health profession. So psychiatrists. Wonderful. So it was a way to, you know, give the people that do all the listening a voice. And that's really where it started. And it's, you know, grown from that place.
It's fabulous. It's wonderful that out of adversity, you've been able to harness some real incredible inner strengths and gifts and be able to share that with the world, literally through technology and through your compassion as well. And that shows through in your podcast and your blog and everything that you do online. So it's just exciting to hear about what you've been up to and how you might encourage others to do the same. What advice would you give to other female entrepreneurs that are looking to do maybe something similar?
Well, starting a company is really, let's demystify. People think, it seems like this mountain that they can't even, climb. And really, it's a matter of just, you know, going online and Googling, how do I incorporate Right. And creating a company, it's not difficult. Mm-hmm. The difficulty lies in, well, how do I actually, you know, make this company have work to do? How do I fund it? That's where it comes in. So you have to be a self-starter and
definitely,
you know, have that passion to make things happen. But starting a company is easy stuff. It's not difficult. Going and getting a phone number, easy. Getting a website, easy. All those things are easy to do. But and I would say with the technology piece, there are podcasters out there that I see. Well, I was speaking with someone who, you know, thought about coming on the network, and they were, well, I've got to spend $50,000 to outfit my my podcast endeavor. I was like, no, you don't. You need a headset, a microphone, and a computer and internet access. Like, that's it. You don't need.
And a wonderful teacher like Kristen, too. That's an important piece. Definitely.
That helps. Oh, yeah, that helps. I was lucky. I had someone, I mean, I didn't have anyone teach me at all how to do it, but I had someone ask me to be on their show, and then I came on as a co-host. So I figured out how to do it from there. In the first year of podcasting, I did it with a headset mic combo. So I sounded horrible and I didn't have an editor, and the shows were still listened to. So, you know, now I have an actual huge fat microphone that you've got too, but it doesn't, it's, I really like going out and kind of demystifying what, you know, people get an idea in their head of how challenging something might be. I could never do that. Sure. And then you tell them, well, yeah, you can. This is how easy it is.
That's awesome. You're able to kind of break it down into manageable chunks that don't feel so overwhelming. And I know I appreciate that in terms of understanding technology here. You're a fabulous teacher, and I'm sure that very, very helpful with others as well. If you have a lot of fortitude and stamina to forge ahead and to have that kind of visionary direction of where you want to go with your businesses. And you say that it's fairly easy to get started with it, but in terms of continuing with it and putting it all together, you know, that's got to be challenging at times too. And I'm impressed with your ability to forge ahead and keep on keeping on. You do a fine job of that.
Thank you. I think the biggest thing that I've seen, I don't know whether this is helpful or not, but for me, when somebody tells me you can't do something, I'm like, really? Watch me. So even if it's not a good idea, even if what they're challenging me to do is not something that I don't do this anymore, thank goodness, because boy, I've been sent on some rabbit trails by some interesting people just because they thought it would be fun, because I'm so, I'm so eager to be like, really? But that fire in your belly, I think, you know, you've got to have that. You've got to have that passion for something about what you're doing. For some people, it's just financial gain, and that's fine. That's their thing. For me, it's advocacy and, you know, creating the workplace that I want to have. And you know, I know the topic we're going to get into today, I won't spill the beans for you, but I think that my creating a really healthy, loving, empowered working environment in my own company was really born out of being in some, because I've been a consultant for 25 years or 20 years. I've been in and out of businesses for that long. I know what a really unhealthy environment is. And I worked in one that was absolutely toxic. So that is not what goes on in my company.
Absolutely. And you know what? That leads me to my next question. You knew exactly where I'm headed. It would be interesting, I think, for listeners to hear the challenges that you faced before you became your own boss that might have been really instructive and guiding you to develop your own business and create that work environment that was ideal and optimal. And so with that, what kind of challenges did you face before you became your own boss? And what occurred that kind of steered you towards becoming the master of your businesses?
Well, I was 27 when I started my own consulting firm. So I could not, this is going to sound awful, but I couldn't fathom having to be somewhere on somebody else's time by 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock every day. And I have to stay there until five. I just couldn't, not that, And honestly, in my company today, none of us work. I don't even know what time people start working when they don't. We just work whenever and it gets done. So that's the culture that is here now. But I just, it always irked me. And I didn't like things like, you know, if it was a very religious office that they make you pray. Not that I have a problem with prayer at all. It just was like, okay, you're imposing your beliefs, and some of the people here are Jewish or are Hindu or whatever. And you're making so there was, seems like there's always been some sort of grist to the mill that I was like running up against. And I hate gossip. I really hate gossip. I hate what it does to people's lives. I hate bullying. And so, and that can happen when you're in an office with people all day long. They are not people of your choosing. They are people that your boss chose. So those are things that, you know, made me realize, you know what, I want to go out, and people always look to me for leadership, whether I'm a good leader or a bad leader. They look to me regardless. So if I'm a consultant, I can dip into a company, do what I need to do there. And just about the time that I start hearing the company gossip is when I'm out and I'm on to the next company. So that works really well for me.
I mean, it sounds like through adversity and observing, you know, leaders and supervisors who really didn't have the abilities. And in fact, in some circumstances were quite toxic and just really negative energy. By observing that and experiencing that, you learned how absolutely not to be, and forged ahead with your own style, which was really the exact opposite of these kinds of so-called leaders, from what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah. And I mean, I was in and out of over 1,000 companies, so I've met some great leaders too. I mean, really amazing leaders. But,
I'm sure. Absolutely.
I like the age we're in now, where it's so different. You don't go 9 to 5. You can work remotely. I liked working with people in countries and seeing, well, how's that environment? And can we get to a place where we are, you're the owner of the company, because you are, but you're working with a team of adults, and adults are responsible people, and they just come and do the work. You don't have to micromanage them. They show up because they're grown-ups. They do a good job. And
for sure. And you trust and respect your employees to deliver what they have been hired to do. It's a very collaborative environment. And it just sounds incredibly empowering, incredibly authentic, and allows your staff to shine and do what they were hired to do. So I can only imagine working with you must be not only really fun, because I know you have an amazing sense of humor, but also very empowering and helpful and nice to be able to have that kind of flexibility to come and go as you please, etc. That being said, I know that it hasn't always been this way, and you've worked very hard to design the ideal work environment, and I think it's wonderful that you've created that kind of environment. I want to hear a little bit more, if you wouldn't mind sharing a little bit about your experiences with those toxic environments in the workplace. So many of the individuals I work with have encountered some very toxic work environments that affect their mental health significantly. Right. And I would wonder a little bit more if you could share your expertise on how that showed up in your workplaces historically, not your current businesses, of course, but historically. Sure. And what that was like for you. And then we could talk further about that.
Sure. I mean, you know, as my job as a consultant, I mean, I've been in offices where people got into fistfights in the middle of me training. I mean, I've been in some pretty, the law of averages with the number of companies I went in and out of would prove that, or it would obviously happen that there were going to be some not so hot places to work in, just because I, you know, I was in so many places. But I didn't really, and I wasn't always, you know, a good boss. And I know it sounds like this ideal place to work, but, you know, my, the people that I work with, I hate saying employees, they're just part of our, they would say I'm annoying as hell a lot of the time. So it's not perfect, but you know, we all
feel comfortable having a dialogue with you.
Yeah, I mean, they have their things where they're like, what is she thinking? But I think what's kind of starting at 27 to now, I certainly have had some toxicity even in my own companies, absolutely, but not horrible, just the stuff that happens. I learned from those experiences and went to just working on my own. And then I worked in an office where I was just sharing space and with another company and doing some things for that company. And the that particular work environment was the most toxic I've ever encountered. And I couldn't leave my office. I could, of course, it's my choice, but I didn't feel like I could leave. And you're being lied to and misled about what's going on.
Right.
Being a, you know, believe in the positive, sis, boom, bah, rah, rah person, you tend to stay and stick it out because you're like, surely this isn't what's happening. Surely this isn't this toxic. Right. Surely this nightmare isn't really a nightmare. So you stay, and the longer you stay in those situations, the more you're dug in. And so, So I watched, you know, what it's like to be around someone who is extremely toxic. Definitely other clinicians have, you know, diagnosed this person not as their clinician, but as clinicians in the field, having worked with this person as having antisocial personality disorder. So, that's impossible. Huge. It's impossible to work with someone like that.
It really is.
And people that can, people that can work in that situation are toxic themselves, because who would stick around and put up with that? So that was very difficult. And that was the last time that I shared office space with anyone other than my own company.
Well, you're a brave woman to be able to, first of all, figure out what was going down, because in those types of environments, and we use the term on many of these conversations that we have as, you know, narcissistic abuse. And that's a big buzzword out there. But, you know, a lot of these leaders in so-called leaders in workplace settings have characteristics of like what you described, either antisocial personality disorder or narcissistic personality disorder or some other character disorder that renders them toxic and frankly, quite emotionally dangerous, if not physically dangerous in some circumstances. You certainly lived to tell the tale in, sounds like, a really challenging environment that you were in. But one of the frustrating things that you speak to is that, you know, when there is this kind of emotional abuse or narcissistic abuse, or in some cases, psychopathic abuse, it is such a subtle, deceptive, hidden abuse. It's very covert and hidden in most circumstances. So the leader has a mask almost of altruism or of being a wonderful leader. And then underneath that, if you work closely with them, then you can detect there's something else going on behind that mask. And these types of leaders, so-called leaders, are very, very challenging, if not impossible, to work with. And anybody who has contact with them is impacted significantly. So it sounds like in your experience, you did have a circumstance that came for you like this, where you had to survive a very toxic environment.
Yeah, I did. And I think the challenge was they want to exert as much control over you as possible, and they will use whatever they can to make that happen. And the more resistant you are, the more independent you are, the more of a high it is for them to try and take you down. And so I had cards stacked against me from the beginning, because I wasn't an employee. So I wasn't under this person's control in a way that employees were. And I mean, you know, it was awful. It was an awful experience. And everything from, you know, overt sexual harassment to covert manipulation, triangulation, gaslighting. I mean, you name it. I learned all about what this is by being in that environment. And you know, some people would look at this person and say that they're the nicest person they've ever met, maybe kind of a wimp, but, you know, other than that, just a nice person. And I have watched this quote unquote nice person split up friendships right. long-standing friendships between people just for the fun of it over and over again.
That's so sadistic, isn't it? Oh, yeah. Man.
Absolutely.
Wow. And you speak to overt and covert toxicity or narcissistic abuse. And absolutely, I think the covert nature of narcissistic abuse in the workplace or even in families and romantic relationships. But today we're talking about the workplace. Because it is so covert, like you said, the person that's being targeted for the abuse is the one that's experiencing it, but perhaps others in the environment are not privy to the abuse.
Yes.
So it creates...
So you look like you're crazy. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And so, like you said, you mentioned gaslighting and how the survivor of the abuse is left with their head spinning because there's all these projections and blame shifting and all of the gaslighting that occurs for the survivor. So that results in cognitive dissonance where the individual is doubting their reality of the situation. And that can sort of almost create a situation where it's difficult for the survivor to leave because they're
yes.
almost feeling like they're to blame and they've absorbed all those projections from the abusive person.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
How on earth did you break out of this environment with this form of abuse and or abuse levels? And you had overt and covert experiences of abuse.
It was a matter of my mm-hmm. personal mental health survival. I mean, I got to the point where I was suicidal and there's mm-hmm. nothing like getting to that place and having the person perpetrating the abuse, you know, laughing and smiling about this and creating scenarios to further, you know, we all have heard that case where the young woman is actually going to prison for sending texts to her boyfriend for him to kill himself. This is the kind of environment that I was in, not just of him, but also of the people that he worked with that would do his evil doing on, you know, his behalf. And it was a matter of just, I've got to get out of here. And I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know what this kind of abuse was. I had never, I'd experienced shades of this from people, but nothing ever like this. This horrible, where you're in an emotional, psychological war zone every single day, and you are slowly dying. So
Great
I confronted him about his overt sexual behavior, which the oddest thing was to go to an employee of his and say, does he ever walk up behind you and like pull your shirt down and rub your shoulders and stuff? And her the look on her face, no, she was just so, and I thought, oh, okay, so he's doing that just to me. Now I know I'm not the only one he's done that to, but I mean, that's what's going on here with me.
Yeah.
And it puts you in a position that's also the power. That's triangulation as well, because he's not doing that with anyone else. And anyone else he had done that with in the past had left working with him, because I did speak to a couple people that he had done that with. And he was very smart in his behavior, and that he wouldn't do it with people that were employees, but he would do it with people that were subcontractors or contractors.
Wow.
And you know, they know what they're doing. This is no accident.
For sure.
So
absolutely, it's like a premeditated sort of targeting of potential sources of ego fuel, really, is what it is for either a narcissist or a psychopath or narcissistic supply. In your experience, it really sounds like you had exposure to not only the grandiose type of narcissist, but also the perhaps the more vulnerable also narcissist that presents as seemingly altruistic or potentially having some level of empathy. But we know that narcissists really do not have vast reservoirs of empathy at all, especially those that are further along the spectrum of malignant narcissism. Exactly. So
they feel real sorry for themselves.
It's
not anybody else.
Seriously. And so this combination of exposure to grandiosity, but then also those that are potentially presenting as vulnerable, but not really. It's a mask. It's a facade. So there's overt and covert narcissism that can be out there as in the form of toxicity as not a good leader in a work environment. And so with this, you figured out what was going on through your own fortitude, through your own resourcefulness. You were able to connect the dots and figure out this is not okay. And there was gaslighting, projection, all sorts of horrific abuse that was going on, and you, through your own fortitude and perseverance, extricated yourself out of there. And right. More power to you, woman. You're Lagertha big time. And I mean it. And having survived this experience and now entering now a thriving chapter of your life, as you look back, what kind of advice would you give to men and women to protect themselves in the workplace against potentially narcissistic or abusive toxic bosses or bullying in the workplace? What kind of advice would you give to both women and men? Because men are affected too.
Yes, they are. I've talked to many young men who I say, don't go if your female boss is, you know, doing things that are inappropriate. Do never go in their office and shut the door. And the biggest thing is you have to set boundaries with these people. You have have to say no. And that's very difficult because they're in the power position. They're your boss. Mm-hmm. It's your job, mm-hmm. your money, what have you. But I think education, really educating yourself, reading about what this is, you know, like me finding your writing, which saved my soul.
I'm so glad it was helpful.
Yeah. I mean, it was just the first thing I came across where I went, that's it. That is what I went through. I think the education piece is the best place to start, because and then counseling is the second place, you know, that you go with, and you do not see a counselor that doesn't know what this is. And then working on your, people with this kind of a disorder are equal opportunity predators. That's what they do. And it's not your fault that they come after you, as opposed to, because they come after everybody, but it is your responsibility to figure out how they were able to affect you the way that they were, other than the horror of that they just treat everybody badly. But if they really got under your skin, as this woman did, you know, I had to do a lot of searching on my own to go, okay, well, what wounds do I have that really made me attractive to someone that could inflict as much damage as possible? So I'm not blaming myself, but I did have to take responsibility for how do I learn what I need to learn so that someone can't, you know, get in that way. And what's so difficult about this kind of abuse is once it happens, you're so, you're one man down. You are with a broken leg, so to speak, emotionally. So you become an easier target for more of that.
Right. And it's something where you learn how to fortify your boundaries, but you also learn that more than likely for targets, there is a high level of emotional IQ that is within the survivor that has been targeted by the predator, because that predatory individual really lacks the emotional intelligence, the empathy, compassion, reciprocity, authenticity, integrity that the target has. So, and I like to look at that from a strengths-focused perspective, that, you know, individuals who've been targeted in a premeditated manner really have some high emotional IQ qualities. That being said, absolutely, I think it's an incredible learning experience to fortify the boundaries so that that kind of abuse doesn't happen again, and to be able to know the signs that somebody might be predatory, whether they're a boss, a family member, a romantic partner, a friend, somebody in the community. It's unfortunate to have to learn that kind of life lesson through adversity, but that is one of the silver linings in this kind of healing process. And you've certainly obtained so many pearls of wisdom, and you've developed an amazing business as a result of that, and created an incredibly empowering work environment for your staff and for yourself. So I think you're truly an example of somebody who has been able to rise out of this circumstance and create a tremendous meaning and purpose in the face of adversity.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about post-traumatic growth, and that's, I was either going to fold or I was going to rise. And I, you know, thank goodness, with some major missteps, chose to rise. And now I'd say when people, not that I'm perfect in any way, because, you know, I'm not insinuating that at all, but I think now it's, like I said before, these people exist and they do what they do, and they come after anyone. If you have a pulse, they will come after you. It's a matter of, I know the signs now. I know I have my boundaries in order mm-hmm. so that when someone mm-hmm. sends me an email or a phone call or something that they do that mm-hmm. I know is toxic projection, right. blaming behavior, I can look at that immediately. And mm-hmm. so can my team, because I have counselors on staff. I'm not one, but you know, they're on our team. We can all right. look at that and go, oh, okay, this person is triangulating. They are
sure.
This, and this. And I know now the old me would have wanted to rush mm-hmm. in and make them mm-hmm. feel better, because obviously they're in pain. And then the empowered, well-boundaried me is mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. I don't even want to engage. I just don't even, I just ignore. I completely
sure.
ignore, because it's not worth right. the heartache that it's not that you become made of stone. I'm still as compassionate mm-hmm. as I mm-hmm. ever was, but
of course,
it's not worth the journey with someone that's truly either behaving very toxically because of what they're uh-huh. going through, or they are a toxic person. It's not worth sure. my heart gets hurt. Mm-hmm. And
absolutely.
I am the protector. I'm responsible for my heart. So
absolutely.
my heart that's deserves right. me saying, mm-hmm. oh, girlfriend, you're not going to get a sucked into that. No.
Awesome. I love it. That's awesome. Boundary work and just working on self-confidence and self-worth. And that's
yes.
knowing your worth is at the core of the whole recovery, isn't it? It's knowing your worth and really owning that and living it. And that's just wonderful that you can do that and really set that example for your staff. And you've worked very hard to create elements of just an incredible healing, emotionally healthy and work environment for not only yourself, but for your staff
and
you know,
to be
being
honest,
a woman of authenticity.
Yeah, mm-hmm. to be honest, they set that for me. I, you know, yes, of course I set that as well, but they're just as responsible. Like I said, you know, you hire people, you bring in people that are emotionally healthy and maybe they go through mm-hmm. a bad time, but they mm-hmm. set those boundaries with me too. It isn't just about me. I hired adults.
Yep. And there's a lot of reciprocity. There's a lot of
yes.
Discussion. There's give and take in your communication. It's a team approach. And obviously there's integrity and authenticity there, which is the exact opposite of what narcissism is.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you've got a lot of wonderful qualities that really create an amazing work environment. And it sounds like you could even write a book or even teach the class on how to create a healthy work environment and how to protect. You wouldn't do it?
I mean, I would feel kind of like a fraud a bit up there because if I didn't do it, not because I have a lack of self-esteem. I don't mean that in any way. I mean, I wouldn't teach that class without the people on my team.
Okay.
Because they would be right there with me going, I mean, honestly, I think that's where the new workforce is not about all about the CEO. That's just a title. It really doesn't mean anything. It's more like, our team could come together. Me being one piece of that team could come together and we could teach that class together and people could see how we communicate, how intimate we are with each other, how much trust there is there, because, you know, they tell me no, their boundaries are set with me. So it's not
good.
It's like I said, it's a team of adults and we have our issues and thank God we're in the mental health field because we're so careful with each other. Like this person having a rough time. Okay. That affects the whole team. And what can we do to help?
Yes. There's a lot of dialogue and collaboration, compromise, empathy, all of those wonderful qualities.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
If we need a healthy relationship.
Yeah. If we need to grow slower because somebody on the team is down, then that's what we'll do. We're not in a race to prove anything. We just want to have a collaborative environment where we feel inspired by what we're doing. And that's means that I'd say all of us are really good at being human.
Absolutely. And it sounds like, you're not only human, but there's a sense of safety there. And at the end of the day, it's all about safety and trust and respect. And you have to have that to be able to have a healthy work environment. And I applaud you for being able to set that up for yourself and your staff, because you set the tone for that. And that's amazing. And having come from these adverse experiences, you really learned so much. There's so many pearls of wisdom. And, you know, I think you have so much wisdom to share with your staff and also with our listeners today. And one thing I wanted to kind of double back on is that I wanted to ask you, if someone has been bullied and they're or abused by a leader or a colleague in their workplace, what would you recommend they do? What do you think would be a good next step for that person? If they suspect they're dealing with some abuse, whether it's overt, covert, or what have you.
Well, I wouldn't share with coworkers because, man, coworkers can be used as, if it's a big enough company and there's an HR department, you know, that's a place to start. But really, I would start with going to outside counsel, you know, going to a therapist that has nothing to do with your work and talking about it there, because it's really hard to document things on your own when you are so much in, you know, trauma and trying to figure out what the hell exactly is going on here. Am I insane? Yeah. You know, so if you go to a therapist, there's your documentation right there. So if it ever gets to a point where you go to court or something, your therapist has that information. So I'd start there and then work with your therapist to decide, okay, should I go to HR? How do I do this? And then you have someone that is totally in your corner. There's no conflict of interest there. So that's the first thing I would do is find that person in your corner that you can
definitely
that can start making a document of what's happened. And then you've got someone on your team, because that's the thing. Narcissism breeds isolation. And so you probably feel pretty darn isolated, and having someone in your corner that's a therapist is pivotal for you to be able to figure out what your next steps are.
Definitely. I think that's great advice. So not only having unbiased emotional support, but also potentially having legal advice or human resource support or what have you, and beginning that documentation strategy while probably simultaneously looking at other options for jobs.
Yes.
Oh, to get out of there.
if this person is, it was so healing for me to hear other therapists come to me and say, did you ever work with this person? And it was the person I had worked with, because this dude definitely has antisocial personality disorder, or he's a psychopath, a couple of them. And I was oh, thank God, because I still was carrying around that I was the problem child, even though I had not had any of those problems like that ever before. And he had with people, person by person on person. So hearing that from other people is really helpful. But that came too little too late. It came way after everything was going on. I would have had so much less angst if I had heard those things. I just felt completely isolated. This is all me. This is all me and my wounds and blah, 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 blah. And
I appreciate your sharing that with listeners, simply because we know that there's a lot of people out there that are being impacted by toxic work environments, and having some sort of strategy in place to have hope for things to be different and taking action can make such a big difference. So I appreciate your sharing that.
And leaving. You don't have to stay there. You can leave, and even if it give you a bad reference. I mean, look, it's the power that these people wield over us, because you're in psychological, you know, voodoo with them, is it's horrible. They really don't have any power. They are very weak people. You just can't see that when you're in that psychological bind with them, that trauma bond. So I left a boss years ago that was horrible and was horrible to everybody, and he threatened he actually, after I had nothing but glowing reviews, I went to work somewhere else. I was like the 20th person that quit under duress. He called my new boss to tell them I was this horrible worker, as I was sitting there in front of her with all of my glowing, you know, and this is what these people do. They're horrible, mean, they want to inflict damage.
Right.
So And I thought, I'll never get another job in my whole life. He's ruined it for me forever. Well, baloney. There are a lot of jobs out there. I mean, that just, they don't have that much power. They really don't.
And there are good bosses out there.
Yes.
Believe it or not, like you, Kristen, there's really amazing people. It can feel like when someone has survived this kind of horrific experience, that the world is clouded in shades of gray and really dark, dark color, and that it's hard to be hopeful for things to be different. But I also hear that from how you speak, that it's important to be hopeful for things to be different, and that you can, through this adversity, construct a life of meaning and purpose and really move from surviving to thriving, which is truly what you've done. You know, you're a great example of someone who has taken an adverse circumstances and really crafted an incredible businesses for yourself and for others. And I think it's just amazing that you've been able to share your story with us. So I think individuals such as yourself can be the source of inspiration and encouragement and hope for those that have been through some tough circumstances. So with that information, I thank you for sharing that. What advice would you give to new entrepreneurs just entering the workforce in general and, you know, kind of looking to get started and dealing with all this stuff?
Well, man, hang on to your altruism. I mean, so many people that gave up 3 seconds before they were going to make it, because, you know, and so many people that don't take personal inventory. I have a friend of mine who I love, and he is one of those. He will just keep going and going and going. And he and I talk because I'll hear the language that he uses. He's an entrepreneur as well. And I'll hear the things that he, or read the things that he posts. And it's always him chasing success. And I'm always turning that around and saying, stop chasing. The more you chase, you're going to always be chasing. You need to just own that you're already successful. And those are hard.
Exactly.
Those are hard grooves to get out of when that is your modus operandi, man. It is really hard to do that. So as an entrepreneur, you need to be a fighter, but you also know when to just lay down the gloves and just receive.
Right.
Just receive that. That's, you know, and my God,
wonderful.
Be a pleasurable person to work with, which means work on your stuff. I mean, if someone tells you you're insensitive, maybe that person's a jerk and they're just projecting, but maybe there's something for you to look at there. You know, I mean, anytime someone's critiqued me, which is not very often, especially now, I still always take it seriously a teeny bit, even if it's someone who I absolutely know is character disordered. I will still think about it for a minute. Maybe I could work on that a little bit.
Yeah.
So for an entrepreneur, you get so tunnel visioned that you don't look up and, you know, constantly take a personal inventory about yourself, your behavior, your communication skills. And that, if you don't do that, you're not, you might be successful fiscally, but you sure as heck are not going to, you know, gain loyalty from and pass out of the people that are working with you.
Good advice indeed. And I think it's important to not only take that personal inventory, like you say, but also to have, you know, collegial groups where you can have support for one another in the field of therapy. That would be maybe case consultation groups or occasional supervision if you're already licensed, but to continue to have supervision and consultation. But then also, like you said, to be playful and to have fun too, and have that element of being in the moment as well. Because the work that we do, whether we're a therapist or an entrepreneur, a business person, whatever we may be, is tough work. So we definitely need to fill our cup, but we also need to be fortified and supported by colleagues who also do this work too. So I think that's all really good advice. And as you look back, Kristen, on when you first began when you first became a businesswoman, what advice would you give to yourself then? Now looking back as a seasoned entrepreneur, what kind of wisdom would you give to that new entrepreneur who was just starting? What would you say to that person?
Oh my gosh. it ain't all about work. Cultivate a personal life. Cultivate a personal life. And I would say, I would tell her, just, you know, I'm speaking to me, so I know my gotchas at that age, and I've carried them with me. They've just gotten less gotcha over the years. The biggest one would be, don't always be such a well of empathy for other people that you don't know yet. Not everyone has your best interest at heart. So, yeah. That's and true. People get intoxicated with people listening to them, and that can turn into all kinds of distraction for you. That can turn into unhealthy things. So reserve some of your lovely giving self for you. Don't always be a sounding board for everybody else's stuff. It sets up an unfair dynamic for you, and it does for the other person as well. Even though they need to take responsibility for being the dumper, it sets up an unfair dynamic in that then they expect you to always be that for them. So that's what I would tell her, just even though she'd probably look at me and not have a clue what I'm talking about, because you know, but I might listen a little bit, like, okay, reserve some of myself for me and for personal life.
Absolutely. I think that's wonderful advice. Absolutely. And I know therapists are always, I'm speaking for myself, but most always reinforcing the need for self-care with our clients. But I think that goes across the board, no matter what profession you're in, filling your cup is so important, and taking care of you. And especially if you're in a position of nurturing, whether it be you're the leader of your business, whether you're a parent, a caregiver, a nurturer in any shape or form in your profession, it's important to nurture yourself and fill your cup and figure out pathways to do that. So I think that's outstanding advice that you give, Kristen. And it's just been such an honor and a privilege to hear about your story and your advice for female entrepreneurs. Would love to hear you share with our listeners where we can hear more about you.
Absolutely.
Where can we hear more about you?
Hearing about me means that you hear about a lot of cool people out in the world that are doing things that I'm not doing, that I'm in awe of. So if you go to mhnrnetwork.com or mentalhealthnewsradionetwork.com and you look at all the shows, including yours, The Savvy Shrink, if you look at all the shows that we have up that are just these incredible, passionate human beings that have voices, and they're healers and they are disruptors. And really, the network is all about how mental health is all pervading. It affects every single area of your life. So there's, you know, just a lot of unique, really interesting people. So, you know, if your outer life is a reflection of what's going on inside of you. So when I look at that list that's ever growing, I think, wow, these are the kind of people that have been attracted to come in. They're all just givers, givers, givers. Some of them have been through hell and they still get up and get out there and do their thing and, you know, do this podcast on top of other jobs and what have you. Mm. I can look at that and go, if you want to know about me, you know, take a look at the kind of people that I surround myself with. That's where I'd start.
Wonderful. Well, you do amazing work, Kristen Walker, and it's just been an honor and a privilege to know you as a colleague, as a friend, and to hear of your incredible work and your story of transformation. And, you know, it's just very empowering, very encouraging. Really, thank you so much for joining.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today. And I also want to thank the listeners that are out there listening to our conversation. And we're happy that you joined us today.
Thank you again for listening to The Savvy Shrink. For more information about this podcast, go to thesavvyshrink.com or visit my website at andreaschneiderlcsw.com. This is your host, Andrea Schneider. Until next time.